Grab your Bible, make your way to Matthew chapter 16. We're now more than halfway through the book. It's amazing how quickly we're getting through the year.
And starting to see some themes and some controversies and some weighty stuff kind of come to a head.
Yeah, you almost feel like, and I didn't take the time to go back and figure out in my mind where I would want to begin this, but you know, the last several chapters have really all just sort of been flowing together. In fact, we're opening in 16 with signs and bread.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we've had the bread miracles and the whole business of signs already.
Right.
And so, really, 16 flows from the end of 15, which has a sign that involved bread.
Well, and Jesus is going to, ironically, both the Pharisees and the Sadducees here at the beginning of the chapter, and then a few verses down, his own disciples, literally kind of chide everyone for not realizing the implications about the signs that he's been doing. You know, so verse 2, you know, literally, you know, you guys can look at the weather, you know, look at the sky and tell what the weather's going to be, but you can't look at what's going on here and interpret the signs of the times, as it calls them. And then same thing, you know, a few verses later, where the disciples are, you know, wondering about bread. And Jesus says to them in verse 11, how does that you fail to understand? I did not speak about bread. You know, nobody's actually getting both the adversaries and his sympathetic but befuddled disciples. Nobody's really getting the implications of these signs yet, which is why chapter 16 becomes a kind of an early litmus test of, you know, who's beginning to connect the dots about the significance of who this man from Nazareth is.
Just one aside, at the beginning of 16, the Pharisees and Sadducees demand a sign. We've made this point before, but it just shows you what you're dealing with when people do not want to see the truth.
Right.
Because he has done signs.
Right.
And the text even says they're demanding it as a way of testing him.
Right.
And, you know, that prompts the rest of the discussion.
Sure.
But how unreasonable to continue to be saying, it's kind of like when you show someone a verse on baptism.
Right.
And their response is, yeah, but is there another one?
Right, right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so Jesus has shown them signs and they're like, yeah, but how about another one?
Right. And see, that's the thing. And I think you got another category there too. You know, while you've got, you know, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, as you describe them, you know, people who don't want to see. The disciples represent people who, because of their own cultural and religious background, it's not that they're hard-hearted as such. It's just, and a reminder for all of us, you have to work really, really hard sometimes to make sure that your own religious understandings and expectations aren't shaped by the world around you that you grew up with,
yes,
and that you're actually listening to straight-up Jesus as he speaks about and reveals himself. Because the disciples weren't adversarial, but they still had all this cultural religious baggage that was causing them some blindness. And so, you know, again, the take-home for us as we're reading and studying is how careful and how intentional I have to be about pushing back on the culture shaping of my mind. I want to see Jesus, but just like the disciples, sometimes we can kind of miss the teaching, the significance, the implications, the applications of what he's saying to us or what's implicit in the signs and things that he's done.
You realize you just said straight up Jesus.
I did.
I was thinking that'd make a cool sermon series. Maybe you can work on that.
Straight there we go.
Straight Up Jesus by Jeff Wilson. Okay.
Oh, my.
So following this segment, now we're picking up in verse number 13, where they really don't get it, Jesus is going to hit them with it straight up.
Right.
Right?
Right.
In the next segment there. So this is probably the more famous part of chapter 16.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the more memorable chapters in the whole book, where you have first the questioning, who do people say the Son of Man is? And that too has an authority dimension of it.
Oh, absolutely.
We've been telling you all the way through this that one of Matthew's themes is the authority of Jesus. And think about that. It's not, what do you think about my teaching?
Right.
Do you approve of my teaching? The question is, who am I? Because if I am who I claim to be, it doesn't matter what I say.
Right.
I'm God.
Right.
And you must adhere to my word.
That's right. And the other thing that's powerful about, you know, what happens there in the central part, you know, that verse 13 and following, is, you know, as you like to, you know, remind us, you know, kind of out of tactics and Kukul, you know, the power of asking questions and making people own their own understanding and out of their own mouth, out of their own heart, reveal where they're at. You know, You know, because, you know, if I disagree with you and you just say it, you know, flat out to my face, I can get angry, I can get upset, whatever, I can become dismissive. But when you ask me the question, I'm the one who has to put what I believe on the table and own it. And so Jesus, it's really powerful that Jesus is asking them questions and fishing out of them, making them come to a, you know, a provisional conclusion, because obviously their faith is still growing. But
yeah, maybe almost he's asking him to put things together.
Well,
because
yeah,
that's
absolutely
the problem.
No, that's right.
That's the complaint with the miracle. You're
that's
not
right.
putting it together.
Yeah.
And so maybe the question is designed to make them take all the pieces.
Who do you say that I am?
Answer the question.
Okay. Yeah, you're not getting the point of all this, so who do you say that I am?
And don't you love that Peter goes from being hero to zero, you know, right here.
Yeah,
he has this great confession. He's put it together. And then in the next three verses, 21, 22, and 30, 23, it just all kind of falls apart.
Well, it's again, it's he can't get past. He's still struggling to see Jesus as he is and accept Jesus as he's revealing himself and not the cultural religious baggage he came with. He just simply cannot comprehend yet, or is not willing to comprehend yet, a Christ, a Messiah who dies.
That's classic, too. I mean,
oh,
that is just such the example of a lifetime of being impacted by culture and who the Messiah is going to be. And Jesus says, let me tell you who the Messiah is, and this isn't what you expect.
Right.
The Messiah is going to die.
Well, and understand, too, the thing that's powerful about what Peter does and the interaction of Jesus and Peter on this is Peter's like so many, you know, otherwise well-meaning religious people today, which is everybody loves Jesus. Everybody's okay with Jesus as long as I get to tell Jesus who he is and what he's going to do. That's it.
Right.
I have no problem accepting Jesus as long as Jesus is the Christ that I expect him to be.
Jesus on my terms.
Jesus on my terms. That's right.
That's exactly right. And notice that Jesus is not easy or gentle in his pushback on Peter.
Well, no, because this is his identity. This is a crucial thing.
The whole thing. Yeah. It's how can you say you are the Christ, the Son of God, and turn around and say this is not going to happen the way you say it is, and it's pushback against his authority.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
And Peter reminds, or rather, Jesus reminds of who is in charge.
Right.
So interesting. And then. You know, to continue building on this, first, let me put this all together for you, and let me tell you what it means. For me, I'm going to die. And then he closes out the chapter with, let me tell you what it means for you.
Right. Right. And that's the thing is, you know, because these are not adversarial Sadducees and Pharisees. Jesus knows their hearts. These are guys who are going to get there in time. And so, you know, he kind of, you know, ironically, you don't know who I am fully yet. You don't really get what it means to say I'm the Christ, you don't get who you're going to be yet either, is the irony.
And the cost.
Yeah, and the cost.
And
that's
the
right.
cost.
Yeah,
you know, right. we quibble over the requirements of discipleship, and I think it exposes a heart that really doesn't get who he is.
Right.
Because if I am who I say I am, then following me means you lose everything.
Right.
To have me and everything that's involved in that.
Well, and the other part of it too, David, is if we accept Jesus on his own terms, then our lives are shaped by his life. And part of what that means is where this chapter winds up ending, which is, you know, basically deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me kind of stuff. That I have to die with him, die to this life, if not literally being, you know, being executed, being martyred, what have you. But I have to die so thoroughly to this world that, you know, my life is transformed by the Jesus model.
It's his life.
And so, yeah, so if Jesus is not a Messiah who's just here to multiply loaves and fishes, you know, because Jesus, remember, the chapter begins with Jesus chiding him. You don't get, you know, nobody's getting what the loaves and fishes are really about. You know, so if it's really not about the loaves and fishes, it's about something else. If it's not about healing diseases, it's about forgiving sins. I mean, if it's about not what it looks like it's about, because I'd like it when Jesus gives me financial blessings, all I can eat food, and heals my diseases.
Yes.
That's a Jesus I can get behind.
Yes.
But to find out that being Jesus as the Christ means he dies, I die. Again, that's now, you know, so Jesus, you know, there's again a piece to get around our minds when it comes to our own lives, our own application, our own homes, and what have you, which is if you're really going to accept Jesus as the Christ as he actually is, you're dying to self and dying to the world in a way that many of us are kind of like the apostles, well, the disciples at this point, hesitant to really want to accept and understand the radical implications of what this means.
And I'm thinking about, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about the kids, because we're always trying to wrap our kids into this Bible reading and as moms and dads, think about some things that we can say to them about this. And I really do think that early in the process of bringing up children, we really need to train our kids to understand that following Jesus is more than going to church on Sunday and going to Bible class with a lesson book filled out and, you know, refraining from some wicked behavior like I see, you know, with my friends at school. We really need, from the time our children are very, very young, to help them understand that they are living sacrifices, that they're literally giving themselves and their lives to Jesus. And that just needs to be real all the time with our kids. And so as an element for your children in all this, ponder how you begin to communicate to them what this radical commitment really looks like when a person signs on to be like Jesus. Great chapter to work that thought into your conversations with your children. We hope your reading will bless you this week.